Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Brainwaves, hear the world differently. Bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5pm.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR, 8:55am, 3CR digital radio and online at 3cr.org.au. I'm Mark and today we're joined by Andrew Kitchen, the founder and creative director of The Good Brick, a social enterprise that provides purpose-driven employment to neurodivergent people. Hello, Andrew, and welcome to the show.
G'day, Mark. How are you today?
Doing all right.
Good.
I suppose to get us started off, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners? I understand you've worked with the NDIS for a number of years. Can you share a bit about that experience?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess I'm middle-aged now, so I've had about five different lives so far. My current one looks like working in the NDIS space, helping people to create music and to record music to help them overcome their various traumas or from their life or to write a song about some things that they're challenged by in their daily life. So it was actually through a conversation with one of my music clients that I came up with the vision for the Good Brick, or I just received it from the ether, and yeah, here we are about less than a year later, and we've got a functioning charity and a shop as well. So it's all been sort of a wild ride, but typically I've been a musician for like 30 years, done a lot of touring all over Australia, and now I just get to work with music, but have had a passion for Lego for quite some time. I think that the Good Brick has cured me of my passion. I'm good to sort of like not collect anymore, but I love the impact that we're already having as an organisation. I guess to give you your listeners a bit of a snapshot, effectively, we run a Lego op shop, I think you could refer to it as, where people donate Lego and we resell it, and it goes out to other people. But all of our employees are neurodivergent young people who are finding it difficult to find work or meaningful work elsewhere.
So what was your first introduction to the world of Lego?
I look very young. I remember going to the first iterations of Brickvention and just being absolutely blown away by the imaginative possibilities of that medium. When you're young, you kind of see the sets on the shelves and you've got your own collection and everything. But then when you go to something like Brickvention and you see other people just explode with their imagination, you're just like, oh, wow, this is next level. And then I kind of went through the dark ages for about 25 years where my Lego was just boxed at my parents' house. And then one fateful day in one of my past lives that I just previously mentioned, when I was an asset repair person for a major telecommunications company, I was working in Warrandyte, and on someone's hard rubbish was two full tubs of Lego along with three or four boxed sets that had yet to be built. And I was like, someone was just throwing them all out. So I threw them in my work van. I was like, I reckon my kids will love this stuff. And so I took it home and I opened the lid, and like within seconds I realized what I was looking at was like thousands of dollars of Star Wars Lego and was like, oh gosh, the kids aren't getting any of this. And then it was all downhill from there. You know, I was just like, wow, this is so much fun, like dragging my way through a box of Lego and going, oh, this part only came in one set. Which set is that? Oh, there's a picture of that set. Oh, actually, I've seen those four other parts as I've been looking through. Oh, there's those other parts. Oh, wow, look, I've got this $90 Star Wars set now to put on my shelf out of this tub that cost me nothing. I ended up getting about 12 or 15 Star Wars sets out of this tub and was like, this is the perfect union of two worlds. I love Star Wars. I've been a collector. I don't know for your listeners this isn't going to be great, but for you, you can see that I've got a massive collection of the Kenner action figures and play sets from the 1970s through to the mid-80s. So I've got that whole collection now. So Star Wars is probably my first love, but then Lego, I guess, came a close second at the time. Now staying sane and not letting this whole venture drive me insane is probably my close third.
I have a feeling how you might answer this question, but I was going to ask, do you have a favourite Lego set or one that stands out to you?
I've got quite a few of my own sort of builds that I've done. Not too recently, not far off a year ago, I built a holdable DL-44. No, it's not a DL-44 blaster. It's Han Solo's blaster. It was actually designed by someone in the US, I think it was. And so I just bought the instructions off Brick Vault, collected all the pieces and built it. And it's just behind me here. I mean, I can show you. This makes for terrible radio. But so this is a holdable version of Han Solo's blaster entirely made of Lego.
It's amazing.
Some really cool details, like there's, you know, the wooden look of the handle and then the little golden ring. But it's based on the German Luger gun. And, so that's a pretty cool set that I saw. And I love that how you can just grab it and swing it around and it doesn't just fall to pieces. So that was one set about a year ago that I went, yeah, I'd like to put that together. The funny thing is about my own Lego collecting, I'm probably less interested in the sets that you can just walk into a shop and buy, because I love when people walk into my studio and they see, they go, I have never seen that AT-AT. I've never seen that speeder bike. I've never seen that Biker Scout UCS. Like, where did you get that? I've never seen that particular, you know, 7,000 piece Razor Crest. What? That's not the UCS one. I'm like, yeah, none of these things were designed by Lego.
They're right. Designed
by Lego fans.
Okay, so there are communities online that construct their own, put together their own instructions to build sets
correct.
That are not official. Yeah,
yeah, using Lego parts, but not actually designed by Lego.
So you're the founder of The Good Brick in Greensboro. You've mentioned that it's a social enterprise. Can you go over what a social enterprise is?
Yeah. So effectively, it's a bunch of people in the local community that have a good idea and that go, that this could benefit our community. So it's aside from the for-profit sector. So we're effectively a not-for-profit. So if we do make profit, that's not divisible by the founders, if you know what I mean. So any monies raised needs to go back into the social venture. That's essentially the easiest way to go about understanding it. But it's where most charities start. And there are, you know, certain tax exemptions and that kind of thing to help us get off the ground. And lots of business grants and that kind of thing. So we are fully ACNC registered, which is, I'm going to get this wrong, but it's like the Australian Charity and Not-for-Profit Council, but if you search on that website, we're there, and there's certain things, certain hoops we need to jump through to stay registered. Social venture, bunch of people just trying to help other people in the community.
And when did you first open your doors?
5th of February this year. So from my first moment of having the idea about The Good Brick to us opening a shop was about 8 months, I think it was. So pretty, from what I understand, pretty meteoric. That's the word I'm looking for. Or I could just say fast. Fairly fast. But it was just one of those things that seemed to strike a chord with a lot of people in the community. That I messaged the Melbourne users group of Lego Facebook group, and I just described the store and said, this is what I'm trying to work towards. And a particular lady by the name of Mel Hutchison reached out and said, goodness me, this ticks every box that I'm looking for in a job. Like, not so much location, because it's about a 45-minute drive, but who cares? I love Lego. I love neurodivergent youth. I've done all sorts of on-site and job training with young people, getting alongside young people. All those things combine with the good brick.
So as you mentioned, one of the key aspects of your work is employing neurodivergent people. Why is that so important to you and to the organisation?
Quite simply put, it's on our constitution. Now, I've got a big heart and I would like to help every person that walks through the front doors, whether they have a disability or not, all right? However, if you try to help everybody, you end up running yourself ragged and not helping anybody. So if we are kind of targeted and we have a pretty strict guidelines and boundaries as to who we're here to help, then we can actually make a measurable difference in that space. Say, for instance, in the neurodivergent employment in Banyul, it's at 80%. So if you're a neurodivergent, you're autistic, or you suffer from dyslexia, then it is 1 in 5 is employed. 1 in 5, right? So in the city of Banyul presently, for what they call neurotypical individuals, that unemployment rate is at 27%. So it goes from 80% to 27%. So if we can, as the good brick, within the next 5 years, have 100 young people come through our shop, get trained up, and then move on to their next step, then we can make a difference into that 80%. So we see ourselves as a first cog organization, right? So people come in, first cog on the bike ride, you know, just to get you off the mark, get you ready for cog 2. And cog 3 and cog 4, et cetera, et cetera. So sort of a train and release sort of mentality, and that we want to see people come to the good brick, have a great time, learn an absolute ton, and even simple things like rocking up on time, not gaming for 12 hours until your alarm clock goes off, and then you need to get up and go to work, you know, like having a good night's sleep, packing food, like just thinking ahead, being planned, looking at, you know, when the train leaves and what time you need to be on the train. Even simple stuff like just the getting to and from, fronting up every shift. That's probably one of the first learnings, you know, having a job interview. Everything from customer service through to merchandising, to stock inventory management, picking and posting, website, social media updates and all that kind of stuff. So that it's all inclusive in our program, yeah.
You offer something called the Good Brick Skills Passport. What is that and how can people get their hands on one?
So it's all part of the employment package. So when someone comes on board with us, they're given a passport which basically has 12 different vocational competencies. And at the end of each shift or at the end of each week, they actually have to turn to the page that's perhaps about merchandising. What did they learn about merchandising this week? You know, is it okay to have 40 different Lego sets on the one shelf where you don't know where one set starts and the next begins? How you actually determine pricing? So that all these different skills to learn. What did you learn about customer service this week, et cetera, et cetera? So the Good Brick Passport is kind of back to that first cog mentality of going, this is your record of what you've learned at the Good Brick. So say, for instance, what we didn't want was young people to come and work with us for 6 months and then to say to them, what have you learned? And they go, I don't know. Like, a bunch of good stuff, but nothing that I can put my finger on right now. So this is resume building experience. So we want them to be able to actually look back and go, I have come a long way, you know, and this passport has kind of been how I've actually recorded that growth and that movement towards their own goals. So everything kind of has to be linked in with their goals and through their NDIS plan. So making sure that we're actually increasing their capacities, which is, so it's all under capacity building, and that they're able to step into a new job and actually have the capacity, because we've built that capacity, to do that job, to take instructions, to learn new skills. So people have said, do I like this? This place looks amazing. This place looks awesome. My son would love to work here. He's not really a Lego person. I'm like, that's okay, because at any workplace you go to, there's a certain amount of onboarding and learning new lingo and learning new systems and all that kind of thing. So it's, I'm not like, if you're a neurodivergent youth and a huge Lego fan, we're just the right place for you. That might be the case for a lot of our employees that have a massive passion for Lego. But a lot of them might be like, I used to play it as a kid. Well, are you willing to pick up the hobby again as we go through your experience? Because it will help if they have, you know, a teachability about the passion / addiction that it is Lego, you know, now.
So before starting The Good Brick, I understand that you worked, I'm not sure if is it a type of music therapy with people who have experienced trauma in their lives. Mm. Had you had any experience working with the neurodivergent community?
Yeah, I actually worked at Jet Studios for Banyule Council. So I worked there for about 6 or 8 months, something like that. Then I had another couple of opportunities open up where I was just like, one of the most difficult positions in life could be choosing between two great things. And I kind of just had to make a choice. So I had to let go of Jets, but they do a fantastic work at their studio, combining music and young people with various needs. So I had some beautiful moments at Jets Studios. So when I re-engaged with Banyule Council to talk about The Good Brick, I was kind of, to an extent, a familiar face, and was able to just pick up the conversations with a bunch of the people there behind the youth programs and such. But I also worked in one of my other lives that I mentioned earlier as the Freezer Push Start coordinator at The Push. So The Push is an organisation that supports young people right across the state through the Freezer programs. And there's about 70 or so Freezer groups all over Victoria. And they all host events within their own community to engage the young people. So I used to work with them as well. So I had to relate to and get along with all sorts of young people from different life experiences, metropolitan, rural, and everything in between, and just learn about what it is to work with young people as they learn event management skills. I've got three teenagers myself. my boys are neurotypical, I've also involved in faith communities around Melbourne as well, where I've had exposure to all sorts of young people, and I tour in a rock band, and I've been in a rock band for about 30 years called Antiskeptic, performed in front of many huge audiences for that time. We've done about five albums now, I think. Relating to a lot of young people through all of that time as well. So I guess the Good Brick comes out of my passion just to see young people thrive, and particularly around this neurodivergent space in my own community, where I saw such a disparity between 80% and 27%. I was like, I need to do something about this. I can't sit still and not do something about this. This is unfair. This is an injustice in my own community.
What have you learned through this journey, either personally or professionally?
Just how much work a human being can do in a 24-hour period. like that a brain that doesn't necessarily have an off switch has no boundaries around, oh, I've woken up at 1:30 in the morning. Maybe I'll go to the shop and do like 7 hours work before I then do a 9-hour working day. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So off I go to the shop, come home at 9 o'clock, have my breakfast, and then work from 9:30 to 5. So I guess I'm learning to be careful about my own boundaries, because having a business of this nature is you can always pick it up and do something that you really feel was really important right at that moment. But also being a present husband and father and friend is also an important thing as well. It's been a wonderful reminder in what, in my opinion, is a fairly dark season in this world, of the beauty in humanity. And so many people coming around the good brick and going, we really believe in the vision of this space and this is just wonderful. How can we get on board? How can we, you know, support you in any way? So it's been a wonderful reminder of the goodness in people.
Can you share any stories that have really captured a positive experience someone has had at the good brick so far?
Yeah, sure. We've got one of our volunteers came on fairly early and just said, look, this is something that I would love to be involved in on a voluntary capacity. And this person was sort of probably mid to late 50s. And I was kind of like, this person doesn't exactly fall into our sort of 16 to 25 year old category. Oh, well. But they're willing to come for 3 hours on a Friday night and jump on board and help us out. And this particular volunteer has built sets, counted Lego, put stock in drawers. And then talking with her, she actually let me know that she's in a very, very high stress and busy position as a personal, personal assistant to a CEO of a major, major company that everyone knows in Melbourne, and that Lego, she's realising, is her way to calm herself down. And she said, I'm not far off retirement and I'm freaking out as to what I'll do with my life. And the good brick, and this is where she started to tear up, she goes, the good brick, even though I'm only here 3 or 4 hours a week, is starting to become my ray of hope as to what my next season, what the sort of thing that my next season might involve. And I was like, oh, that's, I'm so glad that you're here. You know, that's wonderful. We've got, one of our volunteers has been I would estimate a 16 to 17 hour a day gamer, and is now doing about 3 to 4 because he wants to look after his sleep and get to work on time and not be yawning through the whole day. So that's one win against the gaming industry. Woo! There's only about another 200,000 in the city of Melbourne to go, but we'll get there. So just the difference that we can already see, like people are transforming before our eyes in the shop. So as I said when I actually launched the shop in my speech, and I said, I'm not at all excited about running a successful Lego shop. That doesn't excite me at all. And I said, to a small degree, I don't actually care that much about neurodivergent training in employment. What I care about is hope. So you give a young person hope that they can get up each day and go, I've got hope in my day. I've got purpose. I've got something to do. I've got a community. I can make a difference. I'm part of something bigger. Then that person has hope for their actual future, right? You're overcoming all sorts of hurdles in that moment, right? So this is what I'm actually passionate about, the pursuit of hope and the giving of hope. So yeah, that people have a place, and there's I could give you multiple more examples of young people who go, this is my place. Of one more example is where I had a mum call me of a young man who's been coming and doing two volunteer shifts a week, 3 or 4 hours, and she rang me and she said, my son's just riddled with anxiety at the moment. I know he doesn't normally come into the shop today. I thought she was ringing to say, you know, he's not going to be able to come in for a couple of weeks or whatever. And I was like, absolutely fine. You're not leaving us high and dry at all. We'll miss him, but no worries. Like, look after him, tell him to look after himself, tell him all the best and anything we can do, all that sort of thing. But she goes, the only thing that he's saying will help him right now is to go to the Good Brick and sort some bricks and do a build and put some stock in a drawer. And I was like, wow. So at a time of need, this young man went from, I'm just going to go to my room and probably play some high-stress, anxiety-producing war game on his computer, or he's going to go and engage in a community and actually help create something bigger than himself. You know, and I was like, that's pretty cool that we gave him that option. So, yeah, that was a really beautiful moment.
And I suppose on the other hand, what are some of the challenges people have faced and how did you walk them through those challenges?
Look, we do have a small shop and when you've got 10 or 15 people in there, it sounds like it. It sounds like a small shop with a bunch of people in there. So even just simple things like this, that we're perfectly okay for a young person who's coming in to volunteer. One of two examples I can think of off the top of my head. First one is I'm happy for them to always bring headphones. If that just noise cancels and gives them, you know, like some soothing, calming music to listen to, and that helps them overcome the fact that there's multiple conversations happening behind them. Or two, I'm happy to just give them a bag of Lego and a few containers and go, if you want to work at home today, that's fine too. But yeah, we're not a big shop. Initially, when we were designing the shop and how we'd actually lay out the footprint of the space, we were like, oh, and in this particular area, there'll be a chill out zone with one of those egg seats where you get into the egg and like you can't hear anything outside of it, and it's like sensory deprivation, and everyone can calm down, and then they'll have like a multi-textural wall where they could. And it was just like, we realized just how small our shop was. We were just like, man, our shop is small. by the time we've got 5 display cabinets in there and 3 shop counters and a gondola in the middle, that's pretty much the shop footprint. And the back room's like half the size again. So it's just like, Tetris, you know. So in the future, and I'm talking 3 to 5 years, I've got no idea. If we were in a position to get a larger shop space, we would probably be able to have like a quarter of it a sensory, like, what's it called? A room that is caters for people with sensory issues. So we've got the option to have music in the shop or not to have music in the shop, depending if people just like to zone in and like, I can't have music while I'm working. Otherwise, I'll be like, what was that lyric? Hang on, what am I doing? You know. So, yeah, there's simple things that we can do to try and help the space be more accommodating.
Thing that we haven't spoken about yet, but sustainability is also a big part of what you do. Can you tell us a bit about that side of your work?
Yeah. So there's two ways that I can kind of speak into that. The first one is environmental. And I've had people say to me, we had heaps more Lego, but I threw it all out. And I go, when you say you threw it all out, what do you mean? There's like, no, well, we threw it in the bin because we'd finished with it. And I was just like, you're aware that, like, old bricks still connect with new bricks and, like, some of the old stuff is more valuable than the new stuff. And they're like, oh, right. So if I can save a bunch of Lego from going into hard rubbish, which, like, you know, my first big find was on hard rubbish, we've done something good to keep plastic out of the ground, you know, and for Lego to actually be something that's reused and multi-generational and all those good things. Sustainability, I guess this probably isn't the sustainability that you're talking about, but we've got a big task on our hands. And at the moment, it feels like a sprint because we're still setting up the shop. We're still getting the e-commerce side of business going, but We want our staff to feel at home and not under pressure and as though this store's going to be around for 10 years. So thankfully, through some NDIS funding and some grants we've received, we still need to make Lego sales, but it's not like we have to make budget every day, every week, etc., etc. We've got a bit more margin and the possibility of a bit more grant funding coming in. So the last thing I'd want young people to do is come in and their first workplace is high pressure, high stress. You have to hit your KPIs because that's just going to make people freeze up, last for like 2 weeks and then just like, nah. If this is genuinely a learning space, we have to allow for people to be on that learning curve and to make mistakes and to take longer than possibly they could or, you know, whatever. We've just got to allow margin for people to warm their way into the workspace. If we are a different workplace, then we have to accept the fact that we're employing people for their first experience of work. And that's how it is. Yeah.
And Lego can be pretty sought after these days. Do you find it difficult to get people to donate?
No. Not at all. A couple of donations. Let me speak into a couple of the donations we've received. One was a boxed set from 1963, where it's a little city with petrol station and hospital and parks and stuff, and you fold out this mat, and then you build the little houses on top of the mat, and it came with little Lego matchbox cars. So there wasn't a piece of plastic to be seen. They're actually metal matchbox cars. And then there were also trees that you put in certain spots. And the actual trees themselves are metal and they're hand-painted. And this set was 100% complete and we estimate it to be around sort of $2,000 to $2,500 set of Lego. So this was under this person's house for 50 years. And he's like, he goes, I don't know what to do with it. And I was like, I want you to be aware that this is a highly valuable item. And he goes, well, I wouldn't have the first idea who to sell it to. If it helps you guys, then great. And I was like, it will help us. And that is great. That'll pay our rent for a bit. So there was that. And then also a guy who is actually like our shop is under the roofline of a church called All Saints Anglican Church. So we're renting the space. They used to have a Christian bookshop there, and that's closed down maybe like 18 months ago, and so we've jumped into that space, and they made it more better for us to use. They did quite a renovation to make it good for us to use, and for you know whoever else in the future. And one of the guys actually connected with the church walked in. He goes, "Oh, I've got a bit of Lego from my sons. None of them want it anymore." And I was like, "Okay, sure." So he comes in with four tubs of Star Wars Lego. I'm talking like a Republic gunship. I'm talking a Sandcrawler. I'm talking an MTT. Some of your listeners are like, I don't know what any of these things are. Large scale Star Wars Lego sets, all with minifigures, all complete. A few of the stickers were peeling and that kind of thing. So we just stuck them down as best we could. And then we priced them accordingly. So it's not mint condition Lego. It's used Lego. But yeah, it's I've been amazed with the donations. I know this is going on radio, probably not something you should say on radio when you're starting a business of this nature. But there's been times where people have walked past with like bags, and we're like, oh, another donation, and then they walk straight past the front door, and we're like, oh, it's like they're just shopping bags, because like it's wonderful to receive a donation of Lego. It's really great. It helps our business. A big tub of pieces of Lego, to break that down into either sets or parts that we'll actually put in the drawers in the shop, it's probably 30 hours a tub. Conservatively, it's like 30 hours. So if someone walks in with a tub and it's all made up, like this car and this dinosaur and this train, that's gold, because we just double check it, we pull up the instructions, we go, oh, there's actually just one or two pieces missing there and there, and there are the minifigures. Fantastic. Stick it on the, you know, price it and stick it on a shelf. But if we have to actually go through a tub and one, get out the fake Lego, get out the crayons, get out the I've actually found some kids' teeth in the box of the Lego. Get out all of the Kinects, all these different toys, the Matchbox cars, get out all the human hair, the dust, etc., etc. And then I'm like left with the Lego and going, okay, what can I make of this? Is there a set here? Maybe, maybe not. But yeah, we are not struggling at all for donations and actually having something to sell. The challenge for us has been the processing of the stock as it's arrived. Kind of going, how do we actually take it from a loose tub of Lego and quickly get it into our drawers, divided down to the very last piece into the drawers? How do we do that quickly? So we're coming up with a few different systems, and we're finding our way.
So it sounds like you're pretty good for donations at the moment, but if someone listening would like to donate their Lego, how can they do that? And are there any types of donations the Good Brick can't accept?
Look, if it says Lego on it and it's Lego, we'll accept it. There's an audience for Lego no matter what theme you're talking about. Like, so if it's from Bionicles or the Castle series or Sonic the Hedgehog or Prince of Persia or Minecraft or whatever, there's someone out there that's like, oh man, I'm trying to get every Minecraft set that Lego ever made, you know, blah, blah, blah. And if we happen to have three of them that are very rare, then we've got it, and we've got it for sale. Mario Brothers has been a big one recently too. Lego Mario Brothers. Anyway, so we've got our shop, and did you want me to give out the address now?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah, so it's 14 Church Street, Greensboro. So we're under the roofline, as I mentioned previously, of All Saints Anglican Church. We are open Wednesday to Saturday, 4 days a week. We need Sunday, Monday and Tuesday to lick our wounds and to sort through the donations that we've received so that we can actually restock the shelves and go again and pack all the orders that have been made online. So, yeah, if people have it in themselves to, instead of just handing over the box of Lego, if they have the capacity to do two things. One, see if they can find the building instructions. If there's building instructions, we've got half a chance to know what sets are actually in the box without doing proper forensic level searching and hunting online and that kind of thing. All takes time. Find building instructions. And two, if they have it in and of themselves to even give their Lego a wash, that would be a huge start because, yeah, it's pretty gross, like going through and finding toenails and human hair and like just like, yeah. Anyway, so, yeah. If people have got, like, oh, if they've got fake Lego and they've got their real Lego, oh, I'll just give it all to the Good Brick. With the fake Lego, we rehome it. But, yeah, we don't have any fake Lego in our shop.
And if someone wants to join your team, either as a volunteer or employee, what's the best way to apply?
It's simply just to make a point of contact with us. So hello@thegoodbrick.com.au. And they can send us an email. We're keeping a database of everyone that's interested in volunteering and jumping on board. And we'll get back to them shortly. At the moment, we've got about somewhere between sort of 45 and 60 people that have expressed a desire to volunteer. And several of them, probably maybe even about a third, have actually said that they would actually like to be a paid employee of the Good Brick as well. So at the moment, we're refining our processes as to how quickly we can get back to people. I had a person say yesterday, hey, I put my expression in 3 weeks ago and I haven't heard anything. And I got back to him and said, I haven't spoken to my son in about 3 months. No, it's not that bad. I didn't actually say that, by the way. So we're doing our very best to get back to people in a timely fashion. And to work out when would be a good time for them to come into the shop. Given that we've got one operations manager in Mel on site during all business hours, and she's got her own work to attend to as well. So if you had five volunteers in at any one stage that depended upon you, you're not going to get any of the work done that you need to get done to keep the business going. So we also just need to manage the experienced volunteers and new people coming on board. We're not going to try and put five brand new volunteers on in one go. You know, we're going to take one of our volunteers who's been with us for the last 3 or 4 months and then go, all right, we've got a couple of new people starting this morning. Could you help them to understand how to just divide up some stock and how to scan it into the drawers? And once you've taught them that, they're good pretty much every time they come in if that's something they enjoy doing. So, yeah, the challenge of the store has partly been around keeping the shelves restocked after the weekend and also getting all of this loose Lego that we're receiving and getting it into the drawers as quickly as we can.
And before we wrap up, it sounds like you don't have a lot of time on your hands these days, but do you have any Lego projects that you're hoping to build when you find the time?
Some years ago, I think it was when I last got COVID, I did a Lego mosaic of the Star Wars Return of the Jedi that well, but you know, the biker scout, the white helmet, you know, with the Ewoks flying through the speeder bikes in the forest and that. I did a mosaic just of a biker scout's head. So it's a flat piece against the wall. In fact, if I rotate my camera, there you can see it on the wall there. So I did that just out of loose pieces of Lego, just for a bit of fun. But I have been thinking it'd be pretty cool to do one of them life-size, like proper, like 6 foot tall, and, you know, holding a blaster and that kind of thing, you know, with the forest sort of scene behind him. I was like, that would be pretty cool. The only problem is this. About 2 or 3 months into the Good Brick, I had about maybe about an 8,000 to 10,000 piece Lego collection myself, just of loose pieces. And in one spur of the moment, I don't know what I was thinking, whether I'd had some generous juice that morning or something like that. I just went, I'll stuff it. You know what? Let's just give this to the Good Brick, chuck it all in the drawers. That'll help us a fair bit and clear up some space in my garage. And at the end of the day, I've just given, I don't know, $3,000 worth of Lego to the shop. Could I, like, if I really wanted to, you know, pull the pieces out of the drawers at the shop if I wanted to do a small build, you know, like, and I spoke to Mel and she was like, that's fine. Whether I actually do or not is another question. I don't know that I actually will. But I've kind of cured my addiction of buying and building Lego by working at the Good Brick and getting it going. But I don't know if you can see on the top shelf behind me here, I've got a whole bunch of Star Wars sets. I'm kind of intrigued about that. It's a simple Star Wars set. I can't even think of the set number. But it just says Star Wars, like on the opening crawl. In the Star Wars font, and I was like, that'd be pretty cool just to put in the middle of the top of the shelf up there, and so maybe I'll get myself that set before too much longer.
Seems less ambitious, but I think it'll look good with the aircraft behind you.
Yeah,
or spacecraft,
true.
Rather.
Yeah, the ships, yep.
And, I guess, again, where can people find you? And is there any other ways people, besides donating bricks and their time, is there any other ways that people can support the Good Brick?
Yes, most definitely. So we've got our website, thegoodbrick.com.au. We're all on the socials and everything, so you can connect that way. But if this has, like, if listening to me talking about the Good Brick and our vision to change the lives of young people who face more closed doors than open doors, if that has moved you in any way, and if you are in a financial position to give you a gift, one of the things under the ACNC is that we can actually give a tax-deductible receipt. So we can actually help at this point in time you with your tax deductions. You might at the end of the year give a bunch of money to the Royal Children's Hospital or to the Good Friday Appeal, which is actually going to the Royal Children's Hospital. Anyway, if you are open to the possibility of giving us money, we would greatly appreciate it. And if you go on thegoodbrick.com.au, the top right-hand corner is a red button that just says donate. And then it comes up with three options. It says donate time, donate money, or donate bricks. So if you've got some spare cash lying around and you're willing to get behind us that way, that does really help us. That'll just enable us to employ more people and to change more lives. That's what it comes down to.
Thank you so much for joining us, Andrew. Us at Brainwaves, we wish the good Brick all the success, and we love what you're doing, and I can't wait to check in every now and again and see how it's going.
Thank you very much for the support, and thank you very much to your listeners for listening in and supporting Community Radio, all the great and important work that Community Radio does for young musicians, developing musicians, and for local and community events which wouldn't blip a radar on commercial radio.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that.
No worries.
You can find more of our shows on the 3CR website, 3cr.org.au, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to send us feedback or suggestions for shows via email at brainwaves@wellways.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 5 p.m. for another episode of Brainwaves on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.